Hello, I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple. This is old method for saving money. It's called the envelope method. Well, it's making a comeback on TikTok, but they've rebranded it, of course. On TikTok, it's called cash stuffing. I'm going to speak to a TikToker named Courtney Crandall about why it's so popular and how it works. Now, for some of us, retirement can seem like it's a bazillion years away. With our instant gratification culture, it can be really difficult to find a way to live in the moment now and also save for the future. We're going to talk about this culture of now with Myron Genick. He is co-founder and CEO of Evermore Capital. And we're going to talk about the mindset shift and also something called a target date fund. Now, say you've been chosen to oversee the wishes of someone's will. It's called an executor. Well, being an executor is a huge responsibility. David Eady has written a book on that responsibility and how to carry it out in a competent way. He is a certified executor advisor and the author of Executor Help, How to Settle an Estate, Pick an Executor, and Avoid Family Fights. I'll talk about how to do that job successfully. Plus, one way to help you pay for that home renovation. Homestars has partnered with a tech platform called Perch to create a new financing tool. Shira McGinn is CEO of Homestars. She tells us how it works. And I'll speak to Brandon Beavis, who's a personal finance YouTuber and founder of the Investment Academy, about financial literacy and how he's teaching Canadians the basics on investing. This is Moolah La, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country, and by Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. Let's get started. One day, you're gonna be dead. We're all gonna be dead, and we will want someone, we will need someone to act as an executor, to move the process along, to resolve the will, resolve the estate. Now, you're dead, so what's the big deal? It's no work for you, but for the person that you hand that job to, it can be a lot of work. It can be no easy task, and there can be some relationship dynamics with your executor and the family. There's lots of things that need to be thought of and sorted through. And so today we're going to talk about that. David Eady is a certified executor advisor. He is the author of Executor Help, How to Settle an Estate, Pick an Executor, and Avoid Family Fights. He joins me now from Montreal, Quebec. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce. How are you?
I was reading the beginning of the book, and it really relates to the third element of this book title, Avoid Family Fights. This was not an easy road for you. Tell us why.
Well, the book came about because of my situation of 7 years, 10 court appearances, and $50,000 in lawyer's fees to settle my parents' estate, and they had a will. And basically, every time I would talk to a client or I'd talk to an individual about what I was going through during that time. I'd hear about one executor who was still having problems. I'd hear about another family breaking up. And I didn't want anybody else to have to go through what I went through. And COVID came up and I couldn't travel. So I decided to write the book.
What is that job? What is the job of being an executor? Because lots of people like me is like someone asks you, all right, okay, like... I guess, sure. But what is the job?
It's a job that nobody wants. Hmm. It's the worst job that you, if you accept, you really have to go in with your eyes open, because the individual who's asking you to do the job, it's the biggest favor that you're going to be taking on. You're looking to put aside at least 100 hours of your time, probably most of the time during working hours. And it's going to take you anywhere between 18 to 24 months to settle the estate. So that means you've got to do everything. And 99% of the time, most people have no idea, don't know where to start, what to do. And on top of that, you've got ungrateful beneficiaries and family dynamics, which can make the job even more difficult.
You say there are three goals. First, file the right tax return. Okay, that's important. And you've got a lot of details on that front. Second, I can imagine this can be a delicate thing, especially if things aren't super clear, is to distribute to the beneficiaries. What does that mean?
Well, within the will it designates should be sent to the will to the beneficiaries, you're going to distribute it. But I advocate in the book that you don't distribute anything until you've made sure that you've paid the taxes and you've got the clearance certificate from CRA. That's where a lot of times executors run into trouble, is they disperse the money and then they find out they haven't got enough to pay the taxes. And then they have the difficult problem of having to ask the beneficiaries, you know, could you send me back some of the money? So I advocate, make sure you all the bills are paid, creditors are taken care of, especially CRA, and then distribute to the beneficiaries.
And then number three is close the estate. You mentioned 100 hours. What is the lion's share of that time?
It could be anything. That's why I say that it's important that you start to have a team, because a lot of people have no idea of what the job entails. So you need to have an accountant, you need to have a lawyer, and you also need to have a financial advisor as the minimum amount of your team to get the estate settled. But I've seen some estates where executors have to employ up to 17 different professionals to get the estate settled. And that'd be because you might need a real estate agent, you might need an auctioneer for the estate, a estate sale. So there's a lot of things to be done, and a lot of professionals that you're, as the executor, expected to coordinate and get it all done. And on top of that, there's that never-ending buzz of the beneficiaries asking, when am I going to get my portion? When am I going to get my payment?
You recommend that folks ask themselves some questions of yourself to really think about whether or not you would make a good executor. Are you honest? Do you have patience? Are you well organized? Do you pay attention to detail? All these great things. As you go through that list, what do you say to people who honestly look at those questions and say, no, it's not me? How then do you deal with the question that has been asked of you to serve in this way?
Well, then you have to let the lawyer or the notary who's ever done the will that you're going to decline. A lot of people think because they've been asked or they've been named, and a lot of times people don't even know they've been named as executors. It's not against, again, it's a big favor. But you don't have to take the job. You can say no. And if you don't feel that you can, qualified or you can get things done, then walk away.
Co-executors.
You don't need the grief.
Co-executors is a thing. What is your number one tip if you realize either, before the person passes or afterwards that you're going to be doing this with somebody else?
Well, you have to be able to get along. And there has to be communication. If you're the individual who's writing the estate and it's your will and you've named, co-executors, or maybe you've got, as with kids, maybe you've got two kids or three kids and you name all three of them, then you've made the job a little bit more, it'll take a little bit longer, because for any important paperwork that has to be completed, you need three signatures. In my case, there was a family member. I decided to sign off because myself and one of the other siblings, we didn't get along. And to move the process along, I resigned as executor because we couldn't get along, and it was just dragging on for too long. So if you're putting together your will and you want to name your kids, and that's why I talk about it's important to have the conversations. If you've got three kids and you want to name just one of them, and because they're more organized and they can get the job done, you feel much quicker, then explain to the other siblings reason why you chose just the one child. Again, and I advocate so much to having conversations. Mm.
There is one task for an executor that simply would not have been on the radar 20 or 30 years ago, and that is dealing with the digital assets, the social media accounts, the iPhotos that are in the cloud, all those sorts of things. What should people be aware of in terms of how that part of it unfolds?
Well, it's a new part of estate planning. A lot of people don't really think about it, and so you need to make sure that as you are preparing your executor, and I say in the book that you need an executor when you're dead, but you need to prepare your executor while you're alive. and to prepare them, besides, you know, the regular estate things such as your assets, the digital assets, you also need to prepare them in terms of letting them know where all the the logins and the passwords are, because each social media company has their own protocol in terms of how to shut down the accounts. I have a friend of mine, he was telling me how his buddy passed away 5 years ago, and yet they're still getting posts about his birthday and reminders of, you know, what's going on, the vacation and stuff like that. So you need to apprise your executor and also your family members where all those logins and passwords. One email address is probably associated with probably up to 130 or even more digital identities. And you need to get that organized, because you're just making the job even more difficult for the executor.
It is a daunting task, but made easier, I think, by your book. David, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so very much for having me on, Bruce.
David Eady is a certified executor advisor. His book is called Executor Help: How to Settle an Estate, Pick an Executor, and Avoid Family Fights. And the thing to know about how it's laid out, there's lots of great stories and anecdotes, but then it's very tippy. If you're a tippy person like me, like you do this, do this, do this, do this, there's like kind of a checklist set up. So it makes it an easy read, a compelling read, and a bit of a cautionary tale. Pick up a copy.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
With the ridiculous increase in the cost of living in any area of life, it can be really tough to afford the home renovation you have always dreamed of, or the fix that you need to do because your railing on your deck is collapsing. Was I projecting my actual life circumstances? Yes, it's true. For those who can't wait to hold off on that project, they may be thinking about different ways to make it work. Homestars has partnered with a company called Perch to create this refinancing tool that helps homeowners find solutions to their renovation needs, financial solutions to their reno needs, I think maybe would be a way to say it. For more on how the tool works, we're talking to Shir McGinn, CEO of Homestars. Hello there.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
What is this tool?
Well, this tool is all about giving Canadians options to carry out the renovations they need during this time. As you said, interest rates, cost of living, everything just about is going up. Homeowners are probably placing a lot of their discretionary spends on hold. However, life does not stop, and the needs that homeowners in Canada have of their homes will not stop. So in true fashion with Homestar's mission, we are here to support homeowners even during these turbulent times, and specifically to help them utilize underutilized value and equity in their homes to fund those renovations.
Tell me more about that. So this is financing that is connected to the equity that they have?
Exactly. So home values, home prices went up over 24% in the past 12 months. That means that with these elevated home prices, a lot of people are sitting on a lot of added equity right now in their homes. So they can refinance their mortgage to be able to extract those dollars to fund their renovations.
Now, when you say refinance their mortgage, is this actually refinancing their mortgage, or is this a product that can live inside of a current mortgage, like a separate home equity line of credit?
So this is refinancing their existing mortgage. However, this isn't going to make sense for everybody, right? Refinancing is going to be the best option for homeowners compared to lines of credit, personal loans. Now, homeowners can choose to either refinance the entire mortgage amount, and that whether that makes sense is going to depend on various things like amount of time left in the current agreement, rate at which they close, the total equity level that they have. Now, in some cases, refinancing isn't going to be economically sound, but the Homestars and Perch team can also do cost-effective second mortgages, which means you can keep your existing mortgage and take out a second one only for that delta that you need from your additional home equity to enable those renovations.
Yeah, it seems like the big issue on refinancing, if you're on a fixed mortgage, the penalty you would pay to refinance would be more than the price of the deck plus the in-ground swimming pool.
Sometimes, oftentimes. Now, keep in mind that many Canadians are in five-year fixed mortgages. There's many options out there, but many Canadians are actually going to need to face these new rates in the coming year, in the coming couple of years. So the other really important part, Bruce, is that many of these of homeowners are not moving to their bigger homes or to moving to accommodate their changing needs, meaning they actually need to renovate. So it's not like they're going out and breaking the mortgage just for fun or just like some of us did in the past couple of years because rates are low. They're actually doing it to enable them to stay in their homes a little bit longer. And if that is the situation, then utilizing this home equity is actually going to be an economically sound decision. Now, the additional thing that's important for us to tell homeowners is that a lot of homeowners are going to do renovations to stay in their homes another year, another 2 to 3 years to see what's happening with home prices. But a lot of these renovations are actually going to be ROI positive. For example, a kitchen. Put $40,000 into a kitchen, you're going to get that 100% of that ROI when you sell. So not only are you utilizing this home equity, you're actually adding value back to your home.
Based on the assumption that we don't have a correction in the particular place where you live, where your home is.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that is always the situation, but we've seen this trend for a number of years. We've seen that there are significant amount of renovations that you can do that will give you 100% ROI back. And that's really important for homeowners to know and to be able to utilize to do smart renovations and not only adapt to their changing needs, but also give them that value back.
Yeah. And it's a big, people are watching the housing market so closely these days. We're hearing lots and lots of anecdotes about homes not receiving offers. And while pricing has not declined dramatically, that there's usually a real lag before that happens. But volumes are down dramatically, and we've kind of recast our expectations for what people are going to be able to sell for. What is the advantage to the Homestar's perch approach versus high mortgage broker? I want to extract some equity, so I'm going to refinance because I want to fix my deck. Why wouldn't I just go the old method and refinance my mortgage with my mortgage broker who's done that for years? What's the value add from Homestar's and perch?
The important thing that perch brings to the table with the help of Homestar's is the value of options. Perch looks at the value of the home post-renovation and is able to give you that equity to be able to utilize it towards this. Homestars and Perch really are all about giving Canadians options. Perch works with the biggest lenders to be able to accommodate the best options for Canadians. And I think that's really, really important here.
How much does that cost someone in terms of interest rate? And I ask because if you were cutthroat on rates, the cheapest rate would not value your home post-renovation. They would value it based on the present. So I assume there is a premium that you would pay. How much of a premium? How many more basis points would it be to go this path?
It's hard for me to answer that. I'm going to let my finance partners at Perch answer that. But what I can tell you is that with the Homestars and Perch process, you do get access to an advisor that helps you look at each of these metrics to be able to see which option really gives you, the Canadian, the best option to carry out and get your funding.
One of the things that caught my eye when I saw this story was that it came from Homestars, and I thought, oh, I wonder if that makes it easier for someone to get trades, because these days it is so difficult to get someone to actually build that deck. Forget about the cost of lumber for a second, just getting the humans who can come and do that work. Is that a part of the promise? Does Homestars promise that they're going to send a carpenter to your house?
It's certainly what we live by. Homestars for 16 years has been around with Canada's largest network of verified pros. And what we do when a homeowner comes to Homestars and tells us about the project that they want, we will match them with up to five pros that are available in their neighborhood to be able to execute the job. And along the way, we'll ask them if they need support to carry the project out. And when they do, we'll not only work to match them with a pro that's available, but we'll then match them with an advisor to be able to get the right funding for their project that makes a sense for their specific outcomes.
Really interesting. Shir, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Shir Magan is the CEO of Homestars, and she was here to talk about a partnership between Homestars and a tech platform called Perch. It's a bit of a different way to refinance your home renovations. Interesting idea and interesting questions for homeowners about what is a need and what is a want with the debt to income levels that we have in Canada today. Just think twice before you replace that deck. Stay with us. Coming up next on Moolala, a budgeting method that is all the rage on TikTok. TikToker Courtney Crandall is going to talk about cash stuffing and how it works. And later, Brandon Beavis is here to talk about the Investment Academy and the things that he's doing to try and increase financial literacy in this country. I do my best too. I'm a columnist for Cityline. I focus on money, as you can imagine. So Cityline is a lifestyle show. It's on air across North America. And you can check out those segments at cityline.tv.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Welcome back. Moolala, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. There is no shortage of ideas on how to get a handle on your cash flow. But sometimes what's old is new again. I'm bringing in Gersh Singh into this conversation. She has been working in the credit education field for how long?
14 years.
14 years. Okay. So 14 is what? Grade 9, grade 8?
Grade 9. That's a
grade 9.
Ninth grader's lifetime. Yep.
Okay. Ninth grader's lifetime. And Gersh, tell us about the idea that we're going to talk about today.
Well, if you've been scrolling TikTok, you might have come across the hashtag cash stuffing. Creators label envelopes into different savings categories and stuff them with cash. This concept isn't new, Bruce. You may know it as the envelope budgeting method,
yes,
but it's making a comeback. And TikToker Courtney Crandall is here from Fishkill, New York, to explain how it works and why it's become so popular. Hi, Courtney.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And how did you first get into cash stuffing? How'd this start?
From TikTok and YouTube, actually, is how it started. I had seen, I don't remember who I saw this idea from. And so I got on the bandwagon.
Why do you think this has become so popular? I mean, it's so difficult to explain how anything becomes popular on TikTok, but why do you think cash stuffing is the new unboxing video?
I think it's more popular possibly for women, and I hope, you know, I think because it's a fun way of budgeting, and it's, from what I understand, it's a very easy way for beginners to start budgeting without boring Excel sheets and, you know, understanding really, I guess, finance on a stronger level. It's a very basic beginner way to get control of your money.
So for those who don't know, Courtney, how does it work?
So you basically get envelopes, and a lot of people, my brother was laughing. He's like, so you're spending money to save money. You know, people go on Etsy, they buy cute envelopes. It does cost money in the beginning. You can find them on Amazon, and you label them different categories of things that you know are going to come up in your life. So people call them sinking funds. And so it can be, you know, if you know eventually you're going to need new tires, you slowly save for new tires by putting $5 away every single week. And that way next year, you know, when that time comes, you don't feel the burn of the hundreds of dollars it's going to cost you. And so you make different categories. Obviously the categories are going to depend on your life and what will, you know, if you have kids, it's different. If you want to travel, it's different. You can have just an emergency fund, and it's a way to slowly save. That's kind of the best way I can describe it.
You've called cash stuffing a good way to visualize your savings. And I think there is something visceral about jamming a piece of paper into an envelope. How do you check in on your balances? How often do you do that? Do you write the balance on the outside of the envelope? How's that part work?
Yeah, a lot of people have different methods, and so some people would write it down on the actual envelope. I had like a budget planner when I was still doing it with cash, that I would keep track so you don't have to recount it. But a lot of people will recount it at every time, just because when you have cash, there's risk of it being missing or whatever the case is. There's always a risk when you have cash in your house. And so, yeah, counting it every single time you're putting money in it, or you can do it like once a month. A lot of people, once they get to a certain number, they'll get a holder. And put like a $500 slip in there and take that $500 in cash and put it into their bank.
Courtney, what have you noticed about your spending habits since starting to cash stuff?
It makes you a lot more aware when you're swiping a card. It's so easy to overspend when you're going and giving cash. I think you have a lot more, I don't really want to spend this $100. Like, I don't want to see this $100 go. And also it's very easy, believe it or not, it's really easy to start saving little at a time. Like, I think saving is such a scary thing for people because they think they have to take half their paycheck and put it away and live that next 2 weeks off of as little as possible. But it doesn't have to be that way if you start slow.
What would you say are some of the limits to cash stuffing? Because unless you're dealing weed on the street corner or working as a waiter or a waitress, who uses cash?
That is, so a lot of girls, and I was trying to do this as well, which almost does defeat the purpose of not feeling like you're spending cash, will use their card and then go through their finances later and start paying themselves back. But it is for sure, you either are a cash person or you're not. I was never a cash person until I started doing this. And then I slowly always had cash on me. I was buying my groceries in cash. So it really depends, but I never really found like I was personally in a situation where they don't take cash. Mm. You know, I feel like it's actually the opposite. Sometimes like they rarely, but I didn't really find that was like something I struggled with.
So if something were to come up, and let's say you have to take money from a category that you didn't plan, how do you get yourself back on track? It's so physical, right? You've got your envelopes and your cash. How do you change your habits to get yourself back on track when that happens?
So that's what I was also thinking about. This method won't do much if you're not committed to it. You can just as easily rack up a credit card bill and not have the money, the cash in your envelopes to pay yourself back. So at the end of the day, if you're not committed to anything, no method's going to help you do that. You need to want to have that savings to put away and, you know, want to make a change with your spending habits and your financial situation. So obviously, you know, stuff does come up, and even if you have to pull from an envelope that you didn't want to, you pull the cash out and you start stuffing. I mean, that's just, it's going to happen. Stuff comes up in life. It's just, it's unfortunate, but it happens all the time.
How do you determine what those envelopes are and what amount goes into those envelopes? Because I can imagine there's like, I got to kind of figure out how much I will spend on clothing in a month or a year.
Right. So I get that. Get that question a lot on TikTok. And I didn't start trying to do math to try and figure out how much I would need. Like, for example, I have a dog, a puppy, and I knew, you know, we pay for daycare. So if I know every week with between food, daycare, whatever, that I need $100 for Cooper, I'll work backwards from there. If I'm planning for something, I'm going to California in a month. So if I know I'm going to California in 6 months and I want to start planning for that, you can work backwards. If you don't know something's coming up though, such as a house emergency or a tire emergency, you know, you're not really planning that. Like, I would put literally $5 in my car envelope because I never have a car issue, knock on wood, but I've leased my car, I have my car payment. I don't really need to do much for my car. So I was putting in $5 a week And then it was growing. And then listen, if there's an emergency happens, you have an emergency fund. Right. So, and that can be just like you, I think everybody should have $1,000 emergency fund, no matter who you are. Obviously, if you're very wealthy, maybe you have a bigger one, but if you, you know, at the very little minimum, you should have $1,000 emergency fund for something like that.
So it sounds like you're using this method to work out short-term and long-term goals.
Yeah.
Is cash stuffing a method you think you're going to learn? Sorry, you think you're going to use for the long-term?
No. And if I will bring this up. So my brother is a software developer, and I had told him about this cash stuffing, and he's like, so you're putting $5. He didn't understand. So we actually just created it's going to hopefully become an app. Right now it's a website, and it's called Teddy.fund. And it is a digital version of this, this is what we found. Every single person on my TikTok that actually left a comment was, I love this idea. I hate the idea of cash. Mm. And I totally agree. And I think at the end of the day, if you're getting an envelope to $1,000, no one wants thousands of dollars of cash laying around in the house. So what if you're able to have one savings account, one checking account, and still be able to categorize that savings account without taking cash out? So the idea of the digital cash stuffing was having a place where you can make the same envelopes, you can make them cute, you can put your own picture, we have default pictures, and you can stuff the money in these envelopes so you can see, okay, I have $10,000 in my savings account. What does that mean for me? Where is this money going to? Where am I? Do I feel, less guilty taking it out, because I know 500 of that was for my trip to California.
Courtney, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Courtney Crandall's a TikToker. She is a proponent of and a TikToker of the cash stuffing method. Gersh, I love the idea. I don't know if I would do it. Would you do it?
I actually don't think I would be able to keep cash safe. I would be so worried.
Someone's going to rob your apartment.
Something's going to happen. Either someone's going to rob me, or I'm going to spill water all over the bills, or something's going to happen.
What do you use cash for? What do you use cash for? Anything?
Honestly, as a magnet on my fridge. I took a $5 bill and put it on my fridge. I otherwise don't carry cash.
Don't carry cash. I have some cash, but I use it for Asher's allowance. It's literally all I use. But cash stuffing, check it out on TikTok.
Hi, it's me, your debt. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up later, I'll speak to Brandon Beavis. He's a YouTuber and he's the founder of something called the Investment Academy. It's all about teaching Canadians about financial literacy. But first, saving for retirement in the culture of now. Myron Genick from Evermore Capital is going to talk about his tips for long-term saving and investing. If you want to stay up to date on all things Moolala long-term or even short-term, we have a newsletter. You just go to moolala.ca, you type in your email address. We never do anything with that email address other than send you this newsletter, which comes once a month. And we just, you know, link to CBC Radio and Sirius XM and CityLine and BNN Bloomberg and whatever else is up in the land of Moolala. You will hear about it if you've got that newsletter.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
What about now? Now. What about now? How about now? This is a refrain. It is a cultural value. We live in a world of now. And, you know, when it comes to saving for retirement, how uninteresting is that? That is, for many of us, far, far away in time. We don't really want to think about it. And certainly there is a lot of confusion about the best way to start. So we're going to talk about this culture of now and how to kind of work around that. Our guest is Myron Genick. He is the CEO and co-founder of Evermore Capital, which is a Canadian asset management company. And he's here now to talk about now. Hi, Myron.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me on.
What is the culture of now in your words? How would you articulate this and how does it relate to saving for retirement?
That's a really complicated question. I think for many people, the answer can be different. So when I think of the culture of now, I think of, you know, we're living in this state of immediacy. We're just kind of going through the motions. We're going through our lives. There's a lot of stuff being thrown at us in the moment, and we're just kind of taking it and winging it. And it's hard to step back and to think about, okay, you know, in the greater context of my life, where am I? Where am I going to go? You get asked that question in job interviews. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? I really don't think we ask that question of ourselves often enough, not just in terms of career, but in terms of anything. What kind of person do we want to be in 5 or 10 years? You know, what kinds of things do we want to have experienced and so on? So I just think it's slowing down will help us think about the culture of later or future.
And there is a huge benefit to the now if you are a yogi, if you are a meditation teacher, because then you're focusing the energy into the present and we are thinking about the now, we're doing mantras to the now. Not so good if you're you also believe that your future self is going to need groceries at some point. Not super helpful if your present self spends all the money and the future self gets nothing. What are the biggest pitfalls do you think exist when it comes to culture of now and saving for retirement?
So I'm not going to throw any shade on mindfulness. I think it's definitely has its place and it is important to focus on the now and to, you know, think about your breath.
Of course it is. You thought I was throwing shade there? Come on.
Well, yeah, you need to do both, I think, right? So you need to think now is important and, you know, being mindful of the present is really important. Living in the moment is crucial, but so is planning ahead. And so I really think that there are four things that are working against us that are maybe a little bit outside of our control, but if we recognize what they are, then maybe we can overcome them. So the obstacles are, one is psychological. Something like retirement can seem so far away. It's a completely different stage of life, especially if you're in your 20s or 30s. Like, you can't picture that, what it's going to look like when you're retired. So that's number one, is just knowing that it's a psychological thing. Number two is it's intimidating. Thinking about, you know, something like how to invest for retirement, especially if you're not good with figures or if you think you're not good with figures. But I mean, the great thing is you don't need to be a mathlete to be a successful investor. So, but it can be intimidating to get started. Number three, procrastination. I mean, who wants to think about saving and investing when it's, you know, we're getting out of COVID. We don't want to get back to our, you know, pre-COVID lives. And number four is, you know, frankly, inflation is making it difficult. And so the money coming in isn't keeping up with the money going out. But just being aware of the psychological impact of the distance of retirement, getting over the intimidation, getting over the procrastination, and being mindful of inflation. I think recognizing those things can help people start moving closer to investing for retirement.
Now, we're having this broad conversation about the culture of now, but it also connects to a product question. It's a product that you're very, very familiar with. You're not the only one that has this kind of product, but I think it's a good door into talking about target date funds and first off, what they are and how they work.
Sure. So a target date fund is like a balanced fund. So a balanced fund holds a mix or has exposure to a mix of stocks and bonds. So when you're younger, you generally should and can have more exposure to stocks. Stocks are a bit riskier, but they pay off in the long run better than bonds. And because you have such a long time horizon, it's okay for you to be more invested in stocks. As you age and enter retirement and then throughout retirement, you should have a greater allocation to bonds. And so how to change your portfolio from holding more stocks to holding more bonds. So that's what a target date fund does. It's a balanced fund, which starts off with a very high allocation to stocks. And over time that decreases and the allocation to bonds increases. So it's a true all-in-one product that people can buy, that they can invest in, so that the risk tolerance that they have and the risk appropriateness of the product changes as the investor ages.
Right. And I think the big benefit for people who are into it is they don't have to do anything. Like,
oh yeah,
with you, because you can have an exchange traded fund that is all equity. You can have an exchange traded fund that is all fixed income, but you need to rebalance and think about the duration between the present and the time in which you need that money and adjust the asset allocation accordingly.
Yeah. Target date funds are really easy. I mean, the only question that they ask of you is when do you expect to retire? So for me, that might be 2044. So then, okay, I'll buy the 2045 target date fund. And that's it. I like, again, you don't need to be a math lead. You just need to know when do you expect to retire? So it makes it really, really simple for, you know, people to figure out how to invest for the retirement.
What is the asset allocation at that end point?
So for the Evermore retirement ETFs, the glide path, which is the trajectory or, you know, how the allocation changes over time for our products at the moment, that ends 5 years after the target year. So the target year refers to when somebody expects to retire. 5 years after that, the final allocation is 45% bonds and 55% stocks.
Right. So not zero equity, but not 90% equity.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, to come up with this, we ran a number of, you know, they're called Monte Carlo simulations, but basically computer simulations that use a variety of investor inputs and market inputs. And we kept changing the assumptions and we ran dozens of different simulations where we looked at like literally about 12,000 different possible glide paths. And the one that we landed on worked the best for most under most conditions.
Now, what is great about a product like yours is it's super, super simple. It's super, super simple. But there are circumstances, I can imagine, in which there are other things that you would factor into your equation. So, for example, you've got a pension. So for someone who has a pension, they're going to maybe augment that with an RRSP or a TFSA in which they want to save money for the retirement, but they have much, much higher risk tolerance because they have the certainty of their pension. How do you weave a circumstance like that in to a target date fund? Or would you say, listen, you can be in 100% equity until the day you die because it is certain that you're going to have that base level of income?
Yeah. So those are pretty interesting questions. So when it comes to the pension, usually what is that the amount that you contribute to your pension reduces the amount that you're able to put into your RSP. So to the extent that you're able to top off your RSP with anything else after, you know, your defined benefit or defined contribution contributions have been made, then, you know, you can put that in RSP, put that into a target date fund. And if that amount is little because you've got a great pension, well, then great. But for, you know, most Canadians, they do have a lot of RSP room left over, or, you know, they might not have a pension. So for them, there's that. Of course, there's other goals other than retirement as well. So if you're in a position where, you know, you've got a great pension, and you know, you don't need to worry about that, then that's terrific. And you can focus on other goals. To your other question about whether you should be 100% equities at the end. Well, if you're financially well off that you have that kind of asset base, then presumably, you know, if you have your retirement taken care of, then you have other goals that you can be investing in, you know, possibly intergenerational wealth or philanthropy or endowments and things like that. And those goals should be invested according to the best way to achieve those goals.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Very briefly before we go, what's the framework in terms of fees? So just for our listeners, the average Canadian mutual fund, Canadian Equity Mutual Fund is call it 2.3%. If you're with a robo-advisor, maybe your total cost is about 0.6%. What if we keep apples to apples here, what would a target date fund run in terms of MER?
Sure. So a target date mutual fund, we looked at numbers from Morningstar and we see that they average at about 2.05%. For our funds, our management fee is about 0.35%. When you factor in other fund expenses, you get an MER of, we expect it'll be about 0.45%. And then of course, there are the costs of the underlying funds themselves, which are about 0.09%. So you're looking at an all-in total cost of less than 0.55%. And yeah.
Interesting. Myron, thank you for joining us today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Bruce.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Myron Genick is the CEO and co-founder of Evermore Capital. And our conversation broadly is around this idea of, you know, the present you and future you and the culture of now and how we navigate that from a savings perspective. But I was also glad we were able to talk a bit more about target date funds, because there's something that can be a great, low-cost, diversified fit for lots of different people. Stay with us. Coming up next, financial literacy. YouTuber Brandon Beavis is here to talk about the Investment Academy. Listen, we're so glad you're listening to this show. It may have piqued your interest and you may want to listen to other shows. There are two simple ways to do that. One is to go to moolala.ca. On that site, all the past episodes are there. You can search by name, guest name, or by topic, or you can just listen to them all one by one. Now, we've been doing the show for 5 years, so there are hundreds of episodes. But you can also go to any of the podcast platforms. So you can go to Spotify or Stitcher, Amazon Prime, wherever you listen to podcasts, and you could download the show. You can write a review. You can subscribe so the next episode will just arrive on your device. Moolala is sponsored by Home Equity Bank, the provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. Here's the big idea. It empowers Canadian homeowners age 55 plus to live retirement on their terms by providing them with a safe and easy way to access the equity built up in their home. And given the prices of houses these days, that equity can be considerable. The funds can be used for whatever the client wants or whatever the client needs. And that could be travel, it could be helping grandchildren, or it could be supplementing their day-to-day expenses. You can access up to 55% of your home's value with no monthly mortgage payments required. Go to chip.ca to learn how you can stay in the home you love without having to move or downsize. That's Home Equity Bank.
You're listening to Moolah La, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Yeah. Financial literacy is important. Yes, of course. We know it's important for young people. Yes, of course. But listen, lots of young people have not engaged in this topic for a whole bunch of different reasons. Brandon Beavis decided he would be a part of the solution on getting younger people to engage. He started making YouTube videos to help Canadians learn the ins and outs on investing. And then he started something called the Investing Academy, which where students in the academy can learn more about the stock market, learn more about investing through various courses online. He joins us now from Richmond, British Columbia. Hi there, Brandon.
Hey, Bruce. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Why did you decide to start the Investing Academy?
I'd say you kind of nailed it there, actually. I mean, I would say it's not only young people that lack the financial literacy in our world. It's kind of sad, but there's people of all different ages and demographics that don't know what to do with their money. They don't know how to invest. They don't know how to set up a brokerage account. And long story short, I joined the industry when I was quite young. So when I turned 20, I was an advisor and I was working at my dad's firm. And when I kind of figured out this knowledge and the fact that it wasn't out there and the fact that it's not taught in schools, I'm like, I have to do something about this. So we first actually started our YouTube channel and the Investing Academy has grown since then. But that's really long story short. It's to get the word out on investing, finances, and everything money.
How would you describe your tone on YouTube? Who, like, if you were to think about the persona of your target viewer, what would they see when they clicked play?
That's a good question. They're going to see a young kid, not necessarily the sharpest out there, not the suit and tie type of thing.
Are you speaking about yourself there?
I'm speaking solely about myself here. My audience is very sharp. Although I can't see them, I know they're looking good behind the laptop or phone. But no, I've always just tried to be very authentic to myself. And I just turned 27. So I'm not, I feel like I'm getting older, but I'm still young in the big scheme of things. And I just like to kind of resonate with those people. It's crazy though, our audience has really evolved. When I started the channel, we focused on millennials. We said, hey, this is a very important demographic. When you're going out into the world, you need to know about this stuff. But it was surprising how many older viewers ended up sticking around for whatever reason. I think it's just the knowledge at the end of the day. But if you looked at the demographic breakdown, we speak to every single age group. And even in our academy, we have students who are 60, 70, 80, surprisingly large amount of them. But no doubt where I think I resonate most is with the younger audience, because I'm kind of a younger guy too.
Now, you mentioned that you worked for your dad's firm. So you were raised in this world. You could go one of two ways with that. You could have been like, oh my God, this is fantastic. I love this. I'm going to do all this. Great, great, great. Or you could reject all that dad did. What was your relationship to money and to investing growing up? Was this an easy crossover for you to walk over to YouTube, or was like, oh, finally proving my dad right?
That's such a good question, Bruce. And no, our story is a little bit unorthodox. I mean, I'm not one of those people that had a big realization one day and I was in debt and struggled with this. I've always had a good relationship with money, and I can thank my dad to that. I mean, ever since I was young, I was forced to save at a young age. I started investing when I was 10.
Wow.
So obviously I had a lot of help from him, but he had some accounts set up in my name, but I was buying my first stocks, like I believe it's Apple and McDonald's, or sorry, not Apple, McDonald's and Coca-Cola were the first two shares I ever bought, and I still own them to this day. And that goes back
when
I was
a young parent would allow you to buy McDonald's and Coke, let alone consume either of those devil oriented products.
I was probably begging him. I was begging him on a weekly basis to go get us a Happy Meal. So I think we didn't eat McDonald's all too much, but when we did, it was always a treat. And to be investing in these companies, it really got me from an early age, just understanding that when you are an investor, you are a business owner. You own a fraction of the business.
And invest in what you love. I'm totally
invest
teasing.
In what you
you're,
love. So
you're allowed to have McDonald's every once in a while. It's okay.
Conceptually, I see what you're coming from. But I was very happy to own those two companies as a young kid. But yeah, to answer your question, for me, it was not, it was a pretty clear path. You know, I was able to be raised in a way where I've never had to stress about money. I've never had to worry about this thing. And just to kind of tell my story and to get people on that path early enough, that was really where the opportunity lied on YouTube. And I figured I might as well go give it a shot.
What are some of the courses that that people can partake in the Investing Academy?
We have a ton of courses, and that's actually what's super exciting about where we're going now. It's no longer just stock market education. So we used to be primarily focused on the stock market, and there's 100 plus hours of courses for beginners, like a first-time investor. You have more advanced courses for getting into the research and the economy. There's actually, as we speak, and there will be more going forward, but there's 6 instructors on the academy right now. So I'm just one of them, right? One of the many people you can learn from. But we're actually bringing on content in, you know, retirement planning from a CFP. We have content on like mortgages, on real estate, the Smith maneuver. We're really trying to expand our horizons to really hit all different areas of finances, because there is a lot to learn outside of just the stock market. But as of right now, there's a ton of content on there.
Now, there is a ton of content for free out there in the world. The Investing Academy has a fee. I'm looking at this, become a student at the Academy for only $19.99. Give us the framework here. Now, I will say, just so you know what my bias is, I believe people get value for what they pay for. So it's not like I'm chiding you for making a business out of this. What kind of a financial investment is it for people?
I got you. No, I really appreciate that thought. And yeah, I don't take it in a bad way at all. You're absolutely right. There's so much free content out there. And for a lot of people, going the free route, going on Reddit, going on YouTube, that is all they'll ever need. But I'm also a huge advocate of training courses. Some of the best investments I've ever made in my life are paying for coaching programs and courses. And really where I think it comes down to is to have information condensed and presented like right in front of you in the way that you need it, that is a huge value add. And again, for a younger person that has all the time in the world, go and search the internet, go learn on yourself, go test, go try. But a huge percentage of our students are people that are busy with their families, they're busy with work, and they may not have that luxury to say, well, I just want to experiment for 2 years and just learn on my own. Give me what I need to know, give it to me right, give it to me straight. And yeah, we've settled on a price that we feel is extremely, extremely affordable for $20 a month to be learning from. Again, I don't just speak for myself, but other professionals, people that are in the industry who have it's tough to put a value on the courses, but we have sold these courses in the past for over $10,000. If you combine everything on there now, it's pretty ridiculous in my opinion, but yeah, it's a price that for some people makes sense, for some people they don't,
right.
But at the end of the day, I totally see where you're coming from.
You also have this high net worth one-on-one coaching program. And if you could see my face, I would have one eyebrow raised because on the one hand, I was like, oh, okay, it's a coaching program. I know lots of people who do coaching and all sorts of different personal, you know, trainers and life coaches and all that, career coaches and all that. I look at this and I think, is this just lead generation for people to come in and bring their assets and then they just become traditional financial planning clients?
Amazing question. Well, the answer to that is no, because we are not licensed anymore. Myself and my father, Mark, who had been in the industry for 2.5 decades, we of course were licensed. We had to be when we were working and we were building up our book here at his independent firm. And in order to do YouTube, we actually had to surrender our licenses. I know that's kind of weird, but with compliance and with the brokers kind of watching over our backs, they don't want us saying anything that doesn't align with them. Not that we would, but it's just the industry standard. So we are not licensed anymore. We don't manage people's money. We can't take on a client in the sense that we're going to, you know, build their portfolio for them. We are strictly on the education side. So even our coaching program or our high net worth coaching consulting service, we don't ever see the students' money. We don't ever touch it. We are giving them more or less education for them.
Are
to
they
do with
DIYers? Like, would they be?
Absolutely. DIYers? So that's exactly right. They're the ones that would be best managing their money on their own. In many cases though, Bruce, it's not an all or nothing. It doesn't mean that you have to be entirely DIY. You may still work with a financial advisor or an investment advisor and manage a portion of your net worth on your own in a Questrade or Wealthsimple.
Interesting stuff. Brandon, thank you for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Hey, it was a blast. And thank you for having me on.
Awesome. Brandon Beavis is the founder of the Investing Academy. And they have a whole bunch of online programs and all that one-on-one coaching, as we mentioned. He was joining us from Richmond, British Columbia. That is our show for today. A big shout out to our sponsors, Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country, and Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. If you want to stay up to date on all things Moolala, it's simple to do that. We've got our newsletter. This newsletter comes out once a month, and you can sign up for that at moolala.ca. Also, subscribe to the podcast. And if you've got a second, leave us a review. It doesn't even matter if you hate the podcast. Actually, it's still fine. And if you have complaints, if you have thoughts, if you have feedback, if you have ideas, if you have questions, we're super easy to get a hold of. Ask@moolala.ca. Ask@moolala.ca. On social, at Bruce Selry Twitter, Bruce Selry Moolala on Facebook. Thank you so much for joining us and have a great day.